Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Everybody, welcome to G'day MMA. We are here, Alan Joban, Jason Ellis, and we have a guest this week, Casey Mitchell. We have never had a guest.
First time.
Yeah, and we already fought him.
We did.
That's what happened. That's why we have no guests, because if you want to be a guest on this show,
you must
fight us, both of us. Yeah. Yes.
And then we have a powerlifting competition, possibly.
We thought it was the best sell ever. Like, who wouldn't want to be a guest on this show? You get to fight both hosts. But apparently nobody wanted to show up until Casey
took the challenge.
That's right. And he did exceptionally well, and he also won the stomach punch challenge, which is another terrible idea from Alan Jones.
I thought I was going to do much better, actually, because I do a lot of ab conditioning in class all the time. I'm usually in the top one or two winners of it. You hit me with the first punch, and I go, okay, he's got a lot of power. And then Jason finishes me off with that, like, when you hit high in the abs, like, those are just kind of not fair.
You did it first. You punched me right in the holy bit right there where there's no ab. And I was like, oh, we're going to play that game? Okay, you fucking asshole. And I aimed high too.
I caught myself when KC would hit. His windup was so intimidating. You see, he flexes his arms. And so on the windup, I find myself going on my tippy toes to try to like deflect the energy. And then I get knocked out. And then Jason and you and KC are in there. And Jason's doing the same thing. He sees the windup. He's trying to come up. It was a debacle.
Yeah. And then you bench press my wife. So welcome to the show. That's all you have to do. If anybody else wants to be a guest, just do all those, then you're in. So we don't know that much about you. I know from your Instagram and moving around with you today that you are missing a leg. And I obviously know that you are a vet and that happened. And I saw a little bit about it and how they've... and we did speak a little bit about painkillers and multiple surgeries for years and years to get where you are now. So explain a little bit about that. And I guess I did not know that you already trained MMA before the injury.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah, a little bit of it before.
Because people that don't know, Casey is a high-level weightlifter and is now the first person to ever... You got a license to box, right?
You're sanctioned. We're working on it right now. It's almost done. Yeah, we're just getting
professional. We're not talking professional. About an amateur headgear.
Yeah, no. Just going to go pro. I know like some people are like, how can you just go pro already? But I mean, I have like a little bit of fighting background, but there's a lot of ways to go pro.
And it happens all the time.
Yeah, it happens all the time. I mean...
I did that.
A lot of people do.
I mean, in MMA, in boxing, I had an amateur boxing fight first. Yeah. But in MMA, I didn't even want to... It was a skateboard guy that was having an MMA fight. He was having his own MMA card, Brian Scheckler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he was like, I want a pro skateboarder to be on the MMA card. Ellis, you train? I was like, yeah, I train, but I train enough to know that I'm not a real fighter.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, but we'll put you against a guy that's as good as you. And I'm like, oh, well, then if that's the case, yeah. So then I had a pro MMA fight without having any amateur fights. And it's not the best way to go about it. But I think when you're older and you're...
You kind of got to.
It's just different. Not doing it to I wasn't doing it for a career. I was doing it because I wanted to have a fight and see what it was like to have a real fight.
Yeah. And there was never even, in boxing maybe, but in MMA, there was never even amateurs 10 years ago. It was straight to pro. And then amateurs came about 10 years ago. Now people all will have like an amateur career before then.
Yeah, boxing's
different. Boxers will have 200 fights, yeah, go absolutely. To the Olympics absolutely. And they say, I'm ready to go pro and make money.
Amateur nationals, all that stuff. But if you look at them, they're young kids. You know, I'm 36.
36 now?
No, I just turned 36
I did the same thing when I got my license for the Athletic Commission when they went down the line and they asked how old you were. And I said, I think I was 36 or 35 or something. And the whole table went, why is he doing that?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, wow. It just dawned on me that I'm way too old to be
later
here.
Later in life.
According to who, you know?
Right, yeah.
Because I was, when I look back at that, I was a fucking spring chicken.
Yeah.
I had another fight 10 years after that. So you can go.
Yeah, I feel fine.
When it comes to getting licensed, like I said, people get licensed all the time in MMA and all kinds of combat sports going straight to pro.
Ben Askren got...
Ben got it.
License.
Yeah.
They licensed Ben.
Did they give him that?
Hey, if he can get it, anybody
That's
can
what
get
I'm
it.
Saying, man. We'll get into that in a minute. Yeah.
But do you have any concern or you feel pretty comfortable that the commission will go ahead and sanction you? I mean,
there's always concern mostly because of the leg and stuff like that. But there has been an amputee. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. He 1985, he was... champion boxer.
Really?
He was a pro boxer before, lost his leg in a motorcycle accident, came back and fought all the way through and
had more than one fight.
Multiples.
A career,
Career. Yeah, finished off his career boxing as an MP.
Oh, okay.
So it's been done. So the thing is also with amateur, with like the USA boxing and all that whatnot, there's been a lot of lawsuits because there's amputees that have tried to do like nationals or something like that, and they're denying them denying it. And here's the thing. I'm turned on it myself because I have done research on some of those guys that are amputees that are trying to do these high level amateur boxing. And don't get me wrong. If you're going to the nationals to box, those kids there, they're like on the scale to just turn pro, they're good. Damn. So if you put somebody in there where their balance maybe isn't good or they can potentially injure themselves or you're putting them in a bad situation.
Yeah.
I could see where them as an amateur sanction thing where it's younger kids and stuff, they're a little bit more protected.
The protocol of safety is a little bit higher.
A little bit higher. Absolutely. You don't
want to give a kid a permanent injury from something where he's just I don't care.
And I'm saying kid, even 19, 20, 22, 23 years old kids. And, then I go and I did my research on some of the kids that hit the lawsuits against USA Boxing for discrimination, handicapping or whatever. So there's lawsuits that have gone on two, I think. And I kind of see what they're talking about in the sense of the kids aren't moving real well. And you put them in there with a high level amateur that moves and he kind of moves and kind of trips a little bit here and there. It's a liability, and don't get me wrong. I think that amputees shouldn't be allowed? No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is get yourself to a level to where you can move against somebody that can move and to where you're not going to trip, fall, you have balance. You look like you're able to move like a normal person. I feel like I'm allowed to say that because I'm a fucking amputee. So I try to do the best to move like a normal person. And if I didn't, if I was sparring and doing stuff and I was falling and tripping over myself because I'm missing a leg, then I would say no. I would not, this is not a sport that I can potentially do right now and definitely not at a competitive level, amateur or pro, but I've sparred dozens of times already and I've never tripped or fallen.
So I'm so curious as you're saying this, I'm realizing, if you have two legs and then you're boxing, you don't necessarily have to think about your footwork quite as much. You're thinking about other stuff, the upper body.
Absolutely.
So are you processing how are my legs moving right now along with my upper body, the jab and everything else that has to be processed?
Yeah. So my mind is like a steamroller when I'm boxing.
You're always thinking about your foot.
Yeah, because I have to, because I can't feel it sometimes. From the powerlifting, since I've been powerlifting, I've just learned to really feel my body from my left hip. So I kind of more really feeling my left hip and where I'm at. And every once in a while, when I box, I'll get a little squared up, but even guys with two legs get squared up. Yeah. They get in their square stance on accident, whatever. But I don't do it very often. And so, I move... I've just learned to kind of really feel it through my hip. But then when I get ready to throw a jab, I'm already in my head processing that I'm going to throw or cross to where I can lunge and push off of it. So I do that with my hip.
Because your amputee is your back leg.
It's my back leg.
And you have to be able to push off of that, making sure that the hip is in alignment.
It's in alignment.
Can you imagine having to process anything more than we're already processing when we're sparring to think about how does my hip feel? Do I feel like I have a good base to the ground? Yeah. I mean, it's just so much more.
Right. So right now, like with Rob, you know, he's coaching me a little bit. And then I have another coach down in Bakersfield that works with me a little bit named Tio. They're constantly reminding me when I go to throw across, you know, like push, you know, throw the hip, you know, it's just repetition now where I'm like, now I'm starting to like, when I do it, I'm feeling it, you know? And even in my brain, like even like sitting here, I'm thinking about, I can like almost feel it on my hip. Like, and I'm just sitting here because it's just like repetitiveness of me trying to learn how to do it. And so it's taking a lot of time, but it's kind of coming together, you know? And yeah, so I'm just going to do the pro thing because I'm old.
Yeah.
And
you're not a 21-year-old guy starting his career. I get it.
And, I like it. It's like, you know, it's like you said, I just want to, you know, just get in there and do it. And, I kind of dominated the powerlifting scene for a minute as an amputee. I'm not like the best powerlifter in the world, but I am one of the best amputee powerlifters in the world. And for, you know, top tier amputee powerlifter, you know, and, I've worked really hard for that. I worked, you know, 5-6 years to become that. And so, I'm just bored, you know, I'm just like, what do you want me to do next? Deadlift 700? Fuck yeah, that'd be cool. But I'm just trying to push myself to see like what I'm capable of doing for myself. And then, you know, when I started doing this powerlifting thing, there was no amputees doing this shit. Like not at the level, not like full power. Now. Oh, it's incredible. Really? It's incredible. Yeah, and the best thing is they all tag me and they all put in there like, I'm coming for your records and I'm coming for this. And I'm like, fuck. We train hard, see you at the top, buddy. Let's go. You know, and I love it. And it's motivating. And there's some, there's a couple that I watch. I'm like, God, his squat's beautiful. Like, damn, his squat is so much nicer than mine. Not as strong as me, but that is nice. Like it's so just incredible to see that these guys are like stepping up and like realizing that they can do it too. Cause like, I just got out there and did it, you know, and it's putting them on a level where in their mindset now they don't feel like they're disabled in the sense of they have to compete in a disabled type of event or an adaptive event. They can go compete against able-bodied athletes just like I did. And I mean, I go on the stages and whoop able-bodied athletes asses all day powerlifting. You know, it's just a progression thing. And that's the thing with powerlifting. It's just like anybody can do it. It's just it's a marathon, not a sprint. Anybody can get stronger. You don't have to have genetics to get stronger. You just got to put the time in to get strong.
You don't feel like genetics is
genetics is always a great thing.
Right.
Obviously. I mean, there's a guy, Larry Wills, great genetics. He's one of the best powerlifters in the world. Yep. But he's also been doing it since he was like 10, 13 years old. Mm-hmm. He's got freakish genetics. The guy's a freak ass athlete. But guys that don't, for example, think about it. You know what we're talking about with Ben. Ben's very athletic, world-class wrestler. Jake Paul's not really athletic, but he probably worked so fucking hard recently where he and the athlete didn't. So hard work outbeat the athlete. And that's just kind of like how I feel I am. As an amputee, am I like the best athlete for powerlifting? Probably not. But I worked really hard. And I can beat those that are like kind of like genetic gifted or something like that. You know what I mean? So it's just put us on a different spectrum. You know, we have to work a little harder, train a little harder, train a little different. We can't, I can't free squat all the time like all these other guys, which free squatting means just normal squats because my hip, I've blown this hip like just many, many times because I'm compensating.
Yeah. That's, right? That's what I was wondering. Like,
compensating, you mean blown
compensating, huh?
Like blew it out?
Like it's just
sprained it.
Bad, like, yeah, just
surgeries,
no surgeries, just intense pain. And so I have, like me, I do a lot of box squatting, which is great because it builds explosive.
Sitting down on a box.
I squat down to a box and then I explode up out of it and it saves the hip. And then when I'm about 4 or 5 weeks out from comp, I start putting in free squats. And then that way I'm just, my hip's healthy when I go to compete.
Okay.
Then there's some amputees that they just free squat all the time. And that's just the way it is. But you know, that guy's doing 225 pounds. I'm trying to like squat 500 something pounds. So it's just different, you know, for his training and my training. And then training as like a normal athlete, those guys, they free squat all the time. And if I could, I would, but I can't, you know? So it's just different, but yeah, it's just like, so the boxing thing, like I just want to jump into it and just kind of do it and see what happens, see what I'm capable of doing. And I'm pretty dedicated type person. So,
yeah.
I mean, I trained for 1 year straight without even doing one powerlifting comp before I did my first powerlifting comp. You know, just straight training, not knowing what was gonna happen, you know, and then finally just did it and did it.
What's your timeline like, boxing wise? I mean, what do you foresee in the future?
Right now, you know, it's the first time I've even talked about any of this, like future is boxing. So right now, we're looking like end of August, September.
An actual date.
Yeah, they're working on it right now. So, you know, I got the contract with the promoter I'm supposed to sign. That's kind of like where the where the stop sign is right now for me with them is like, they're just kind of waiting on me to sign this contract. It's a little nerve wracking signing a 10-page, 11-page contract. That's, you know,
for how many fights?
It's more like how many years instead of fights.
Yeah. Wait, you're going to sign a fucking multi-year boxing deal?
Yeah.
And you want to do that?
I don't know. I'm like, that's why I've been sitting on it lately. You know,
maybe we've got Robert looking
off
it over.
Yeah, I've just been sitting on it lately because
you haven't had a fight and you're going to sign a multi-year deal with him?
Yeah.
What if you don't like it?
Boxing? So that's the thing. In the contract, because of like with my circumstances and stuff like that, they're totally fine with me like basically like retiring if I don't like it. Or the whole thing is just that it doesn't allow me to go box under any type of other like promoter, I guess you could say.
You have to box under them for a number of years. Yeah. So you have to finish.
But they're going
to
pay you.
Oh yeah.
And have you guys got, you don't have to discuss with us, have you guys gotten to the numbers yet?
No, not yet.
Haven't even
that's
got to
what
that
portion of tomorrow it. And stuff like that. Like some stuff's in there. It's all like, and like I said, it's more like in the sense of, well, you don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with me in the fight thing. Like, you know, I could go do a pro fight and just annihilate my first guy and then it blows up. And the next thing you know,
and then you
like,
want to renegotiate.
Yeah.
Or
next thing you know, like, I don't know. Let's just say, for example, like, as horrible as it was, and I know we'll get into it, is like, let's just say Triller wants to like get something like me out there, because it's pretty fucking cool to see an amputee getting out there knocking heads or something like that. Now you're talking like what, 6 figures? I think the lowest paid guy that night made 6 figures.
There you go.
So now what, you know? And so that's the thing, is this has a lot on my brain, because I've never signed anything like this before. I'm a businessman. I own a company. I have athletes, but this is fucking different.
And it's perfect timing. I mean, right now we're in the state of the world where boxing right now is trying to figure itself out, right? Yeah. All these Triller and other organizations and bare knuckle boxing and all these things are just kind of like making light of guys that YouTubers, etc. You don't have to be the highest level boxer right now. And so if you could capitalize on it and then you come into the scene and now people are seeing an amputee who could fight. I mean, I think it'll captivate the audience, man.
That's my goal. It's just like I said, to captivate, motivate, inspire. I'm not sitting here thinking like, hey, I'm going to go see Fury, you know, in the heavyweight division anytime ever. I'd like to meet him. You know what I mean? But I'm not sitting there thinking I'm like, for example, Jake Paul, you know, he thinks he's like the reckoning of boxing right now. And I'm like, dude, Jesus Christ. Like, just be a realist. I'm a realist. I just want to do this for myself. And to motivate and let people see, like, just it's what I've been doing. This is what I'm built to do, I think, you know, since my injuries and stuff. And it's just to show people, like, you're capable of just doing whatever the fuck you want, no matter circumstances.
I love that. That's what's driving you, and it's not the Jake Paul story.
No, it's not that. It's not any of that. It's not even like money. Obviously, like everybody wants to get paid because you know we're putting the work in and we're doing shit. But I just want to do this. I don't know. I just woke up one day and I was like, I think I'm just gonna box. Cause I go box and I do it every once in a while for fun. It really like kind of sucks me in, and in a weird way, it kind of makes me a better person. Like I'm just more like stabilized.
Do you think it's more the intensity of having fights with people that reminds you of, cause I mean, you're a guy that you're already training before you went to war and then, you know, you're an adrenaline junkie.
I'm an adrenaline junkie. Right. Absolutely. 100%.
Cause to me, skateboarding, when I fought, why'd I fight? Yeah. Because I wasn't a pro skateboarder anymore.
Yeah.
And I needed something that was fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Or I was not going to feel like I was having a day worth living.
Yeah, that's it. That's I mean, I like sucking too. I like getting beat up. I like it. I like feeling like shit. And in the moment, I'm like, fuck this, you know? But afterwards, I walk out, I'm like, fuck, that was epic. Hell yeah. And then I go to sleep thinking about it, wake up ready to do it again.
Yeah, now I can't punk out because now I gotta face my fears. Yeah. My demons get better at this.
Yeah. And now I'm like, and now people see me doing it. I put it out there that I'm like legitimately going to do this. So it's like, I'm really about it.
If that date holds true, you're talking about stepping into the ring for the first time.
Yeah, 5-6 months from now.
A couple of months. Yeah, 5-6 months.
Ellis Mania is in October.
Yeah.
You can't fight there because you signed some crazy deal with these other dudes.
That's why you were.
Yeah, so we'll see, man. We'll see how it goes. Like I said, it's just I'm pretty in love with the boxing MMA life. Like I like it a lot. And just getting up there messing around with you guys, it just, I don't know. I'm like in this zone that I haven't felt since the beginning of powerlifting. You know, even with powerlifting, I haven't felt that like adrenaline for like the last like year or so. Yeah. I was kind of just going to the gym, going through motion. Don't get me wrong, I love lifting, but it's kind of like making me go in there and lift even more. Like I'm lifting a little bit more than I was now before boxing now, you know, because I'm just like motivated to train, box, stay strong, get in good shape. And so like, yeah, it's just kind of like, it's just all good right now.
Yeah. And so, we share the same boxing coach for our viewers, Robert Sally.
Yeah.
Been my boxing coach on and off for a while. Mm-hmm. I used him for my last fight, and he's really good at just dissecting things. He's not the kind of guy that's going to go in there and do a Mayweather 10-punch combo as much as he'll dissect little things and get the meat and potatoes of it. Just having a sharp jab, making you angling, make sure you're angling out the right way. Small, subtle things that I think is what he's going to need. Casey's going to need. He's not trying to go in there and be the flashiest guy as much as find your attributes, your strength and your explosion and things that you could do well and use that in an advantageous way to get these wins.
Yeah, that's what I like about it is he's really training, you know, me for like my capabilities.
Right.
Like my strengths, and then we're making my weaknesses
having
better.
An understanding of that.
Right. You know, like, it's like I watch you move around. Me and you move definitely different. I'm like, you're more like way out there kind of ways. You're laying a lot of hits from the outside. And me, I'm like, I want to get inside and tear you apart on the inside. Yeah. And working with Rob a little bit, he's, you know, I'm hitting mitts, I'm hitting bags, I'm doing stuff with him. And he knows where the power is for me. And it's when I get up in the inside, like you were saying that you're an inside the body tight, you know, and honestly, I'm just a huge fan of like, dropping a motherfucker with a body shot is way bad.
Are you referring to me? Are we back on this?
Yeah. Did that happen?
That did happen today. But to me, I'd rather knock somebody out with a body shot than a head shot. I don't know why. But it was just like you hit somebody with the body, you see them crumble. It's like, damn.
You walk away. I know when you hit somebody with a liver shot and like when you're sparring and you're like, you're good. And you kind of walk away like, I just did that shit. You need some time. Take some time, brother.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it feels
good.
I like it.
Hitting someone hard in the body, I don't feel like I'm that mean.
Yeah, exactly.
If I hit you in the head hard, if this isn't a real fight, then I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't trying to do that.
Yeah.
But if I get you in the body hard and you take a knee, I'm not a mean person. You should have blocked that.
Because it is an unspoken rule in training that, like, if you're not trying to hurt your partner, you got to go lighter to the head, but you could go kind of harder to the body. It's kind of unspoken. So you drop somebody, it's gratifying, man. It feels good.
Yeah. So I don't know. So, like, yeah, it's exciting. You know, this whole thing's exciting. It's new. I'm like coming into like a whole different like just world than I've been in the last like 5 years. Powerlifting's been my life for the last 5 years. My social media following is like, you know, powerlifting, people that are motivated by fitness and powerlifting.
Yeah.
So it's kind of changing.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's kind of changing, you know, and like my first video was a nightmare. I posted it because I don't care. You know, I want people to see like how heavy I was, how slow I was, and then see the progression. And that's what they're kind of seeing. And it's kind of cool to see them being like
your first video of boxing.
Yeah.
Once you came into the new
terrible.
World.
Yeah. It was terrible. It's just, I mean, it was just slow.
Yeah.
Big brawly, you know, I think I was like 250 something at that time when I first started. And now, you know, and then I post a video with like Rob recently, my hands are just 10 times faster than what they were. And people are like, holy shit, dude. Like the progression. That's to me is like the beginning of the motivation from the beginning. And they're just watching the whole thing unfold.
And we've spoken about this on the show before. We spoke about speed before. And one of the people that I truly learned that from was Rob, that genetically, you're only gifted to go a certain amount of speed, right? You can only get so fast from what your genetics that you have.
Yeah.
But technique will take you the rest of the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're seeing that. You're seeing your technique's getting better, your speed's getting better, things are, and you're in a more ready position more of the time, a higher percentage of the time. It gets you faster. And so
Like,
I love that you're seeing
like,
that.
Yeah, like even today when you were like, you know, telling like, there's the jab, how fast, you know, it's fast. And like in me, I'm like, see, I'm like, oh shit, that is a little faster than what I'm normally throwing it at, you know, and this whole thing's just been crazy. Like, I mean, I'm fully transforming my body for boxing compared to what it was like months and months ago. You know, I'm just really, it's been hard because I'm just usually this big, massive tank that walks around. And now I go to people and I mean, people are like, dude, you look way smaller. And I'm like, I know. But I like it. I do. I like it. Like, I feel fucking good.
Try carrying around a 40-pound backpack.
Yeah, I feel fucking good right now. And I honestly, like, I'm not sitting here going to say I'm a powerlifter. Like, that powerlifters aren't athletes. It's just different. Like, right now, I walk around and I do things that I'm like, fuck, I feel like a fucking athlete, man. Like, I feel like a machine right now compared to like a tank, I guess you could say. You know? Yeah, and that's just,
but you get that big, different. You get like tired and stuff. Like, yeah, gas in ways that would probably scare you a little bit.
Yeah, you know there's many times.
Run, you could probably fucking kill yourself.
Oh man, there's times that I'd be sleeping and I'd stop breathing in my sleep, and I'd have to sleep like when I was getting close to comps. You know, I'm, you know, heavy. I'm 255, 260. I'd have to like sleep at a weird angle with pillows. It's miserable. It's miserable. You gotta have the mask, though. I mean, that's a thing, but it's miserable.
I've heard just some stories where I'm like, man, as a committed guy to like get some shit done, that's bullshit. Mm-hmm. Where there are tons of them, when they get super big, they can't breathe, dude.
Can you imagine? I mean, I'm just trying to comprehend that. I know as a pro fighter, my weight doesn't vary tremendously, but about 20 pounds. I walk around about 190. I fight at 170. And come fight week at 170, I feel like a damn ninja. I'm like, holy shit, 20 pounds less. Granted, I'm dehydrating myself and all that.
Yeah.
But I feel so agile and flexible. And like my punches turn over, my high kicks go up. Just from 20 pounds of shit that I didn't eat on me, right?
Yeah.
And can you imagine 40 pounds? I mean, you're having trouble sleeping, breathing at night. And you take that kind of weight off.
Yeah.
Making this transformation of your body to your pro debut. Yeah, it's. I'm excited to see it, man. I'm excited.
I'm ready. You know, I'm like not, I don't want to say, when I say I'm ready, I'm mentally ready. I'm not,
That's
not
really the whole battle,
ready,
you know?
Yeah,
I mean, you put in the work and you want to get matched up with somebody who's
the
matchup's the same level,
big key, right?
Because that's the, if it's the same level and then it's just your heart against my heart.
Yeah, it's good.
And you're made for war, dude. Yeah. And it's a war.
That's good.
Make no mistake. When the bell goes, it's a fucking war.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. Like, I don't think, well, if I get her, the ref, I don't give a fuck about a ref. Yeah. I have to win this. This is life or death to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how it is where I train down in Bakersfield. It's as soon as you step in the ring, like I tell them, like, you know, cause those guys, they go hard. There's no, every time I've been down since day one, it's never, I mean, my very first time ever sparring down there, it was just get your gear on, get your ass in there. And they go, you know, and it caught me off guard the first time. I was definitely real timid the first time. I boxed one of like Rob's guys, Billy. You know Billy?
Don't know him, but he's a pro?
He's like an older pro. He's like a seasoned pro, older guy. He's a heavy set guy. And so, you know, I was real tense. I was like I was on a street fight. You know, I was just swinging away, you know, and then I watched my video. I'm like, what in the fuck was that?
That's what everybody does.
That's the early stages,
I was so...
That's why you never let two people that are just starting spar each other unless you're an asshole and you want to watch two people try and kill each other.
Watch these two.
I really watched it. I was like, you look like a dipshit. Yeah. I was like, all the training went out the window.
But everybody looked like a dipshit at some point, right?
I was so disappointed. I mean, I was legitimately disappointed. And then I just took that into consideration. And then I sparred 2 weeks later and whole different person.
And it's good to get those hard rounds out early.
Yeah.
That way, you know what it's like to be hit and to face adversity. But then as you... Every fighter, we talked about this earlier when we were training. Now, a lot of us just all train a lot lighter. We don't go as hard. It happens in age, and it just happens in experience, because you don't want to go there and bang yourself up all the time.
Yeah.
You want to stay fresh and sharp. Just work on reactions.
That's key for me right now. It's like, you know, when I'm down in Bakersfield, there's like different levels of boxers in that room. And, you know, I get in there with some guys that are real good, and, you know, my reaction's getting a little bit better because I'll get in there with that good guy who's faster, snappier. And I'm having to react to it. And then I get a guy that's a little slower and I'm just like, I can really pick him apart, you know? And just like, so like the guy, Billy, when I box him, you know, if I go box him now, I can work him over pretty good, you know, compared to the very first time I boxed him when it was just like shit show, you know, look like Triller. Some of the fights on Triller.
I think that first fight's going to be pretty crucial and like getting you the right matchup, the right experience, letting you go in there and get battle tested, getting that victory, hopefully. Yeah.
And I'm like that. Like, I step in the ring and it's just like, even like sparring, it's like a flick, it's a switch. It's the same as like if I'm sitting on, like when I was in war, you know, I'm in the base or I'm in the, you know, my vehicle chilling. But as soon as we'd like the ramp would drop and we're out there and there's fucking enemy, it's like, you know, it's just like whole fucking mentality change. Like, I'm either you're dying or I'm dying, you know, it's just like, which one? And motherfucker, I ain't trying to die. You know, it's the same with me. Like when I box, it's like, you're really going to have to fucking hurt me. You're going to have to knock me out or really fucking hurt me to like put me out of this fucking ring.
How many years were you fighting until the accident? And what was the accident?
So I joined the military pretty young, 19 years old. I was an airborne infantryman. And so my first duty station was Bragg. And then I went to Iraq in 2005, 2006, and I was in the Baghdad area. And so was there, did my shit, you know, fuck shit up for 12, 13 months there. and then came back, got promoted to sergeant, re-enlisted, and then moved to Washington State. Got up there and was helping with the new unit, a striker brigade, like kind of build itself up to get ready for a future deployment. That was deploying. I think it took us about 3 years to finally deploy. And so that's when I was up there, and that's when I got into mixed martial arts because I was doing combatives. And there was a guy in my platoon. His name was Lynn Bentley. He was doing MMA out there. And I believe he was actually in one of the first like Ultimate Fighters. He actually was in one of the Ultimate Fighters, like the very first ones. And so he was in my platoon. So he was doing it. His name was Lynn the Liger Bentley. And he saw me that I could like grapple very well because I just did wrestling for so long and I could do combatives very well. And so he just kind of invited me down to Camp Victory where Dennis Holman was coaching. Yeah. Misha Tate was there before women were even really, they weren't even in the UFC. She was like it at the time. Yeah, Strikeforce. She was it. And so she was there, you know, it was real cool. And I would go there, you know, 4 days a week and train. And then I did about 5 or 6 amateur fights out there in Tacoma, Portland.
Amateur MMA fights.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
They're on YouTube. Man. I have like 3 on YouTube. And I mean, they were like at the bars and stuff like that, you know, back in the day. Like, but I was fighting.
But
you
felt that adrenaline rush. You've been in the cage.
Oh, yeah. I done it. Yeah. And I never got beat in the cage ever during my amateur times out there. I was a great wrestler. It was hard to beat me if you couldn't wrestle. And and so I did that for a while. And then I was actually going to do an amateur title fight out there in Washington. And then I got rapidly deployed. And so that got kicked. And actually a guy that ended up getting the amateur title belt is a guy that I'd beaten twice. Mm. So I was pissed. You know, I was actually in Afghanistan and trying to keep up on all this shit.
When
I heard about it, I was like, motherfucker, you know? And, but you know, I was out there. And so I was in Afghanistan and the Kandahar, Argandal. They put us everywhere out there. Helmand, we were out there and everywhere. And then, I was there for about almost a little over 12 months. And then I went on my last mission. And it was a patrol mission. Just we were just going out in the middle of the night to patrol the area because there had been IEDs being getting set in and Taliban coming through and stuff like that. And then we just ran over a massive pressure plate IED that just blew me apart from underneath the vehicle.
When you say we, how many people in a car?
That was my whole squad. It was my whole squad. So I think it was about 7-8 of us in there.
In a tank?
It's a striker. So it's a tank on wheels. It's got 8 wheels. It moves about 60 miles an hour across the desert. It's fast.
But even when those things blow up, the tank...
That big of a bomb, yeah. It was big.
And how did the rest of the...
So, so basically the IED exploded directly underneath where I was standing. So they all sit inside. So there's like a hatch and they're inside just chilling. And then me, I have like probably my upper chest up, out, and I'm commanding and looking around, you know, and I command the vehicle. And then in the back, I have 2 security guys with machine guns on the back that are like same height out of the vehicle as me.
Yeah.
And then everybody else is inside. My driver's inside like a little compartment. My gunner, who runs a 50 cal or Mark 19 machine guns, he's kind of like in a cockpit underneath with just TV screens and stuff. It's crazy high-tech shit.
He watches the TV screen to see where he's shooting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
The bullets can't get him.
They can't. He's inside.
Nice.
Yeah. And so, and it's got thermal imaging and it's got everything, you know? And so, yeah. So we were basically just cruising around and the IED detonated directly underneath me and just opened up the vehicle completely. Wow. And, sucked me a little bit under. And then, so my driver, he had a little bit of a head injury. So like a TBI, just from the pressure, his head hit the hatch with his helmet on. And then a couple of my air guards were a little bit banged up, but nothing crazy. And then me, I was annihilated. And then all my other guys were knocked out unconscious. The whole vehicle was knocked out unconscious. I was the first one to wake back up. And I remember, didn't think that I got hit with a bomb, though. That's the thing. It's like, I was so good at fucking finding those things. Like, I was the guy. I mean, I have videos on YouTube where I'm finding them throwing hand grenades and running, and they're blowing up. You know,
you could see them from a distance on the ground.
I was just good at looking.
Can you explain exactly what that bomb is, like what it looks like? You're saying there's a plate?
A pressure plate. So what it is, they do all kinds of different things. It's they put like a piece of board and a piece of board, and in between there, they'll put like sand or something.
Yeah.
And then, or they don't, or they just lay it. And then there's wire that basically becomes the charge. And as soon as those two pieces push against each other,
when
puts two charges
it.
Together, the explosives, wherever they have them wired
They've
out.
They've got them all set in the ground.
So they're really smart. So like mine, for example, like, you know, we have a vehicle coming. Here's the pressure plate. So the front tire hits it. So for me, they put the bomb back here.
Gotcha.
The explosives were actually back here. So we actually ran over the explosives before we actually hit the pressure plate.
Right.
And then they're not stupid. You can go on fucking Google and figure out
where
the
you
distance.
Sit, they want to blow up where you are.
Where I'm at. And they know whoever's hanging out of that hatch is the highest ranking guy in that vehicle.
Jeez, wow.
So it's like targeted.
It's thought out.
I mean, they're smart guys. They've been doing war their whole entire life.
I was going to say, it's war, you know.
It's war. They've been doing their whole lives. And, you know, and so that's basically what happened. The tire hit the pressure plate. The explosives were back. And it just detonated right beneath where I was standing at.
Take me there real quick, though. You said you were everyone was knocked out.
Yeah.
You were the first one to wake up.
Yeah. So I woke up and I didn't think that we got blown up because what happened was we went down in a big ditch, like gully down in it and up. And then I remember just sitting there watching the vehicle kind of lift its, you know, its fucking nose is way up in the air.
Oh, because he's out, but the tank's still going.
Yeah. Well, no. This was before the explosion. Like we were just driving. And so when the thing comes up, we came back down and as soon as we came down, we just went a few feet and then boom, the thing just went off. So when I woke up, I thought we had rolled our vehicle because the last thing I saw was like this. And I wasn't fucking thinking, I wasn't in pain at the time. And I saw dust everywhere, shit everywhere. And I was like, and then I realized like, fuck, we got blown up. And I, even at that time, I didn't realize I was fucked up yet. I just remember looking at all my guys and yelling at them to get out of the vehicle, wake up and get out of the vehicle. Cause we've actually had bombs go off where guys get trapped or knocked out and whatever, and the vehicle catches on fire and they burn alive. It happened to my commander, you know? And so the very first thing I'm thinking is like, get the fuck out of the vehicle because this thing's on fire.
Yeah.
There's smoke everywhere, you know? And so they start waking up and they fucking start bailing out of the vehicle and they get out of the vehicle. And that's when I try to like move and I realize, fuck, I can't move. And I can't feel my legs. And then there was a strap that hangs from the ceiling. And so I went to grab it with this hand and this hand's messed up too, cause I banged it up real bad in the explosion and it wasn't working. So then I was like, fuck. So I just started, I had a little light. I started like touching my like body with my hands, feeling everything. And I just looked at my hands and I just had like oil and blood all over my hands. And I was like, I thought I'd lost both my legs. I could kind of feel as far as I could reach, I could feel I had something, but there was just so much blood everywhere. And then my guys got out of the vehicle and then I guess they just realized like, where's fucking Sergeant Mitchell at? And then they just came in and when they came in, they were yelling at me. I was like, I can't move. There's shit on me. And then I could tell the look in their eyes. They're like, oh, he's fucked up. Like I could just see it in him. And so when they picked me up, so one guy grabbed me from the back and lifted me and another one grabbed me. And I remember just trying to help them with that, you know, my one good like limb that I had at the time, trying to pull myself up. I remember when Baker, one of my fucking top tier soldiers, like picked me up from my legs and my right leg was just swinging around freely because I dislocated the knee, dislocated the ankle, it was just swinging around. My left leg was still there, but it was just battered and my pants had almost been blown off me. And so I could see all the blood and I had my very severe second and third degree burns all up my quads and stuff from the batteries had exploded underneath the vehicle. So all the battery acid had been sitting on my skin and burning through my skin because the bomb blew my pants off pretty much. And I still have those pants. And so, they pick me up and they're getting me around the vehicle and they get me out and they get me under some cover from, you know, just in case enemy fire or anything comes. And then Doc Kirker, he comes running up to me and he's like an older cat, you know, and he's like, always wears a Harley fucking bandana and shit. And he's just sitting there working on me and I could even look, and they all love me. You know, these are some of my best friends. And, I can just remember him, like, I could tell he was stressing a little bit because I've been around him dealing with shit. And I was like, how bad am I? He goes, you're pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
He's like, I got you. Just relax. You know, he's like, you know, do you want morphine? I was like, yeah, give me a little bit of morphine. And, you know, he just got me IV'd up and was just trying to stop all the blood that he could. And next thing you know, I'm getting fucking tossed on a medevac. And I could, even at that point, I knew I was bad because I remember they had my head like near the side bay door of the helicopter. And I've flown in a helicopter so many times and I remember just being like looking and just being like, fuck, we're low to the ground. Like son of a bitch, you know, but he just had that nose down and he was just that chopper was moving to get me to the hospital. They were hauling ass. Yeah. And so, and the next thing I know I'm getting unloaded in Afghanistan. I got unloaded and then I don't remember anything except I woke up one time in Germany, from like a fucking flashback of the explosion. But I was in my bed. I don't know. I felt like somebody came up behind me and hit my bed real hard and like scared me or something, but I felt like it was an explosion. And then I didn't wake up again until flying from Germany to the States. I just remember waking up in a military aircraft where it was just tons of wounded soldiers in there. And I could just see them all in the beds and asking for water. And they gave me like a little cap of water. And then I just passed back out. And then, I woke up again.
Because it was They were conserving water?
Yeah, no, just because of medical.
Probably, he was on
meds.
They
and
were
stuff.
Giving you stuff anyway.
Yeah, they were giving me IV stuff.
It was probably
just, yeah, wet probably your just mouth. Wet my mouth. Yeah, yeah, I was fine. I wasn't dehydrated. It's just probably just, they really don't want to give you, they're not really supposed to give you like fluids like that, you know, because they don't know what they're going to do to me when I land and get the hospital, you know. So they gave me just wet my mouth a little bit. And then I woke up in the ambulance. I don't know what kind of fucking truck it was. It's the medical truck. And I remember this girl. She was in the military army and she was wounded, lost her leg. And she was like sitting there and she was pretty distraught. And I just remember trying to tell her like, it's going to be good. We're going, you know, we're going to the best place. You're going to be okay. You know, I was just trying to calm her down a little bit. And I barely remember that. You know, I don't even know why I was even talking to her. Like, I mean, I do know why. I'm a staff sergeant, you know. I'm just,
I was going
to
say, you're still showing that kind of leadership quality.
Yeah, yeah. She was pretty, she was stressing it. And then I remember going through the big doors of Walter Reed Hospital in DC and seeing all the flags and all the doctors and nurses and people coming up to us. And then after that, I was in ICU for a while.
It's great. Like, as he's telling us his story, I could see you seeing it, like you're seeing it and you're telling it, and it's like so vivid, and it's recreating it in my brain as you're saying it. And I wonder, like, you've probably told this story so many times.
I've told it quite a bit. I've lost the and I like to. I do
still come through vividly like that every time. Yeah, like you still feel the emotions.
Some
of it.
I've
feel really good about asking it. Then
no, you're good. It doesn't bother you. Ask me whatever. I don't get distraught about nothing. You know, it's a good thing, and it's because like I've like lost like a lot of memory of like some of the things that I've been through, and it sucks. You know, I've lost like I can't remember a lot of things from like my wartime over there with those guys, my boys and shit. Like I've just over time I'm like losing memory on it, you know, and so when I get to like kind of I kind of think about it, like the going through the door, because I remember that very the flags just kind of was on a gurney, just kind of getting pushed through it. And yeah, I woke up in ICU later, and then I was in I was bedridden for months. And then just was going under so many surgeries. I mean, I've had that.
When did they cut your leg off?
So what happened is they were trying to save it. I woke up in I had a big halo around it, and I was going through a rehab with it. I kept having surgeries on it.
So you were still
and,
for a while thinking you were going to be I was trying, a guy with two legs and walking again.
Yeah.
And what were they telling you? That you same, had a chance?
They had a chance.
Right.
And so I kept my leg for about 6 months, and then they were still like trying to progress with it. And I was like, I'm fucking done.
Why? Pain or?
No progression. And not just that.
Dead.
Yeah, not just that. They were just like, you know, when you're in at Walter Reed, it's like the number one amputee facility in the world. It's state of the art. You see these guys that are, they're already progressing faster than you without a leg.
Like I'm sitting there. Back, right?
Yeah, it's like holding me back. And
trying to hold on to something. That's
and I'm in
there.
Fucking pain. And
then you talk to the doctor. And he's like, well, if you did cut it off, you might have a chance of like healing faster and getting your day going quicker. And you were like, well, then fuck it.
Well, the thing was, like, at that time I'm 25, so I mean, his whole thing too, and I even asked, so like, what he's like, you know, down the road you're gonna have to have like, you'll have to have more surgery, you know, you might have to have an ankle fusion, you might have to have this, you know, you're gonna have like arthritis, you're gonna, you know, he's like, give me all the but you're gonna have your leg. I'm like, fuck that.
You're weighing it out right now.
I was like, just cut this fucking thing off. Then I was like, I even told him, I was like, why did we even wait this long? Like, you're telling me I could already be 6 months progressed right now. Like, he goes, because we can't just do that. Like, if there's potential to save it, he goes, you can make that decision. And even when I made that decision, I had to go see three different psychiatrists just to like make sure I'm mentally like making the
right decision.
Dude.
You could tell them later on that they tricked you into cutting your leg off and sue them for everything.
Rushing the judgment or something. Yeah.
And you're on. I'm on narcotics and I'm on a lot of shit. I'm distraught. I'm fucked up.
Like, I'm actually. You know? I'm happy to know that they get three people to check with you before you cut your leg off.
I went through three psychiatrists, and then even then they were like, "Talk to your family about it, and then go from there."
Good.
And so, so I finally, everybody agreed, and we all just realized, like, and then I went in there and had the amputation, and I swear, it's like, as soon as I came out, I mean, my mom and everybody could tell you, as soon as I came out, they cut my leg, I was waving that thing around. I was fucking, I felt like so much pain had just been taken from me. Obviously, I was on drugs.
Wow.
Obviously, I was on drugs. But I just knew, like, I was like, all right, now we're about to fucking start progressing. Now we're about to start
getting
that's
the best feeling, and I can only relate to this as much as I can without being an amputee, but from the numerous, me and Jason are like the king of injuries and been through every surgery. The best feeling is knowing that the surgery's done. Now it's time to heal.
Right.
It's now the healing begins. It's holding, sitting there waiting for something to happen that stresses you out the most.
I was having so many surgeries on that leg trying to save it. It was crazy.
Right.
Crazy. You know, washouts and surgeries and more washouts and surgeries. Then, you know, I'm trying to, and with that, what was crazy with that is like, at this time, my whole right leg is just in a splint. We haven't even done any reconstruction on my ankle or my knee yet because I have so many open wounds. They don't want to open me up anymore for infection reasons and stuff. So like I had to rehab this, and not just that, we're trying to get me to walk. So this leg was fine if they put it together, like they it was dislocated, so it's back together. And I had a moon boot on, so I could do a little bit of rehab with this leg because I could put a little bit of weight on this leg. So, and then as soon as I could put full weight bearing on this leg, then we started doing surgery on this leg. And it was just like, fuck, like, you know, and then the whole time I'm waiting to do surgery on my arm because I, you know, I have a massive, this whole thing was just a big hole. And it was just, it was crazy. It was just a very long process. And then surgery, rehab, then surgery, rehab. And it was just a fucking nightmare, 4 years.
Do you think your military training helped you survive this injury?
I wouldn't say like the actual like training. I would definitely say that like the mentality.
Yeah.
The mentality for sure. The mentality lives in me now.
Because I feel like everybody I know who's a soldier, well, not everybody, but most of them have that one thing where I'm like, even if you were born with absolutely no gifts and talent at all, they gave you drive. They gave you, you get up and you go. When someone asks you to do something, you fucking do it. Yeah. And that goes a long way in life.
Yeah.
I know I met a guy that was an intern for a long time who had a lot, he went through a lot and he was fucked, but he fucking, I mean, I was like, I like you because I could tell you act weird because you've been through so much shit and people find it awkward to be around you, but I like you. You're a real dude. You know, like if we're going to do a job, you do the job and you will not stop until it's done. And I can tell he got that from being in the military. I'm like, it's a good thing to have because sometimes life kicks you in the dick. Mm-hmm. And if you just keep going, you can, you 9 times out of 10, things get better.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys that, I mean, there's a lot at times I think like, what I've been through is like not a lot of, not everybody can do it. It's a mentality that's been, I think, been put into me.
You'd want to give up.
Yeah. I mean, fuck, I have many times. I'm not going to lie. I've sat on the edge of the bed like many times thinking like, why the fuck do I do this shit?
I feel like when people say they haven't given up, I agree. Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe you. But that doesn't mean that you haven't said to yourself, fuck, I think I'm going to give up.
Yeah.
That's
it.
I had those thoughts creep in.
And then the other part that we're all here is, nah, fuck that. You know what I mean? I ain't going out like that.
Yeah.
But don't even think that there wasn't many times where I've just said flat out to myself, that's it.
Where you felt
giving up. And then I wake up in the morning and go, really, dude? Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Like, no, man, that's not how you do
Everybody
it.
Has that. And then not only did he slap the weak part of him, you know, and continue moving on, but fast forward 11 years later, we're here. You've done your thing in powerlifting. You're now talking about making a pro debut and fighting 5 months. Like, you know,
that's crazy.
There's so many possibilities that you're still showing that are.
How's your good leg? Like, how's your knee and your ankle? As a person that's had a lot of knee surgery.
So weird is that my amputee legs are actually my best leg.
It's stronger.
It's
bad. It makes sense to me because if you said that the bomb blew your fucking knee, dislocated.
I've had every ligament in that thing redone, and I have no meniscus in
that
knee at all.
So the good leg has had ACL meniscus.
Yeah, everything's gone.
Yeah.
I've had new ligaments put in. So I have 5 screws in my knee and then 6 pins in a plate.
But not a knee reconstruction.
I haven't had a full knee replacement.
Right, but all the ligaments have been replaced.
The bones are yours, but
the bones are mine. And I have no meniscus at all.
Yeah.
No. You don't need that.
Nah.
It
just sucks.
I haven't had a meniscus in both my knees for like 10 years.
I've got like 30% left in both knees.
You don't need that shit.
But no, it's just like, it just, this whole leg, just this leg's like, you know, it just causes me more issues than my prosthetic side, to be honest.
It's crazy.
It makes sense to me. As a skateboarder that's had a lot of knee injuries.
Yeah.
They do a lot of great stuff, but they don't fucking, it's not like, you know, I'm going to go to a doctor and get a surgery and now I'm just 25. Like, they haven't got that far. No.
I've been wanting to ask Michael Bisping, who had a complete knee replacement. Mm-hmm. He's got that metal looking thing in his knee. And so I wonder, you know, I mean, obviously
every day.
He's running every day. That's the thing.
Yeah,
he was standing up on it the day after surgery. And even though it was one of the most painful things he's ever done, he said, I wonder, not having all those ligaments that were paining that were partially torn and torn. Now you don't have those ligaments anymore. Now it's kind of just one or two things that you have to keep track of. I wonder if it's better or worse.
I know a couple of guys has knee replacements and I see them running too. And I'm like, fuck. Because like, I swear to God, I and as crazy as it sounds, it's like, I'll see videos on Instagram and it's like, guys just running. And I'm like, fuck, I miss running.
Wow.
I just wish I could just stride out like that. Because yeah. I loved running.
Is that like when you're married and you see a girl walk by that isn't that hot? You wish you would fuck. You could fuck her?
Yeah.
Is it like that?
Same.
Because sometimes I'm like, I wish I could fuck her. And I'm like, you don't really wish you could fuck her. You just want to fuck every time. Shut up.
It's just because you can't. I think that might be it. Because I can't run. So,
as a guy that can run, fucking, you don't want to run. Yeah, it's fucking overrated, dude.
Thanks for making it relatable to all of our viewers.
Yeah. Some guy's like, God, that's probably what it feels like. I remember like that girl the other day. But yeah, no, so everything's just kind of coming along, man. It's just, I don't know why I do some of the stuff that I do, like, you know, powerlifting, now boxing. I mean, I got into very serious competitive golfing right after my injury, because at that time, that was all I was able to do as an athlete was like golf. So, and I got really good at it. I made the U.S. Soldier Wounded Golf Team, played against the British and England. I mean, I got
crazy, man.
Damn good. Yeah, I became like a 4 handicap golfing. If you know golfing, the lower the handicap, the better. So, and I'd never golfed really before. I just get addicted to something and I,
you're a driven really dude. Yeah.
Driven and structure. Driven. I have to have driven and structure. That's just the way it is for me. Then I got in the powerlifting. Now I just want to do this boxing thing and I'll train three times a day if I can, you know, just the way it is, but I don't know what's going to be after boxing. I don't know.
It couldn't go as worse as it did for Ben Askren this weekend.
Oh God.
That's
all. Yeah. Man. And Jason really, on some of the previous shows,
so he's
seen some. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, he showed some insight. He said that he looked like Ben had a good uppercut, and he had some hope, is what I'm trying to say. There was some hope that Askren might have brought it home, but boy, he
fucked up so bad.
Yeah.
It really does. It really does blow my mind that MMA guys, I know they're probably going to get people mad, but I can't believe how bad some MMA guys can be with their hands. I know that, you know, there's the MMA game. There's so many different facets of mixed martial arts. But goddamn, boxing's, you know what I mean? Like, it's right there, you know? It's right in front of you. And your hands are right there. You got to wrestle. You're going to, whatever you're going to do, this is, you got to have a little bit of this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of blown away that you only have a little bit. I think it's crazy that anyone is in the UFC and has a little bit. That one blows my mind.
It's much easier to take a hardcore wrestler and say, this guy's got some fast twitch muscle fibers. He's a killer on the mat. Let's teach him how to box. That takes 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. But you said
fast twitch. Ben doesn't have that. I don't think he ever did.
What I was getting to. Ben is an, it doesn't look like it physically, but he's an athlete. That's why, what's his nickname again?
Funky.
Funky, right? Because he's got a funky style. His body movement is the way that he looks, but he's had success. But he never had that quick twitch. He wasn't explosive, didn't have that muscle fiber. And so it didn't correlate. It didn't relate into striking, that push-pull type of muscle. And you just saw it when he hits pads. It's always and forever going to be that continual 70%. It's not explode and retract. Yeah. He doesn't have it.
So, I mean, I don't know. You may know. Like, how many years has Ben been in like mixed martial arts?
For a long, long time.
I mean, Jake Paul's been boxing maybe 2 years.
Three years.
It's like, fuck, dude.
Yeah,
fuck.
But as a guy that did this before him, if you train for 3 years at boxing and you fight a guy that isn't that great in the UFC at boxing, you fucking knock him out.
Yeah.
Like, I knocked out a dude that was supposed, he had a real job as a fighter.
Yeah.
And he got knocked out by my crappy 3 year training ass.
Yeah.
Because if you train boxing for and you're slightly athletical and you train properly, like not just I go a couple of days, like you train like you're a real fighter.
Right.
And you have athletic ability.
Yeah.
There's a right hand when you pivot from a boxing coach that's trained you, and you have, you know, it fundamentally, I feel like some people just don't have it. It's weird. I don't know why, but some people can train boxing their whole life and they don't have a heavy shot. They don't have fluidity. Mm-hmm. They just don't have it.
Right.
Some people don't do well. I don't read well. That's whatever. Things happen. But if you are slightly athletical and you have a technique, that right hand is going to be way harder than Robbie Lawler's ground and pound.
Yeah.
And I feel like we saw that this weekend. Like, if he could take Robbie Lawler's ground and pound,
people saying that,
how
so
is Jake
stupid.
Paul going to knock him out? I'm like, you guys, I got in trouble with I took shit on Chris Jericho this weekend.
Yeah.
And all his fans attacked me on Twitter.
He's probably got a strong fan.
And I'm like, good, come at me. I don't fucking care. Like, I think he's like, dude, Chris Jericho's twice the man you'll ever be, more accomplished. I'm like, I agree with way more accomplished, but we're talking about a boxing fight.
Right.
I've had boxing fights. He hasn't. He's in fake fighting.
What was the comment?
And the only reason I would call it fake fighting is because Jericho said, nice one with your fake fight. on behalf of Ben and Jake.
Oh, that it was fixed?
And I was like, that's crazy.
Talking about fixed.
I'm like, that's crazy coming from a guy that has only had fake fights to call this fake. Because trust me, dude, that was a real fight. Ben Askren got really knocked out.
Yeah.
Like if the ref started, ended it, watch the tape.
Yeah.
When anybody in professional boxing, when the ref says walk to me forward, and you walk that way, you're fucking out, you're fucking dude. That's out. What happened.
Yeah, and the right hand landed flush. And you could see the process leading up to it. Yeah. Right before that, he had thrown that exact same punch about 10 seconds before that. Yeah. And it just missed.
And he just missed. And Ben didn't do anything.
No, right. Ben did nothing. Missed. He said, Ben didn't react. All I have to do is step into it 2 inches more and this will land flush. He threw the exact same combo right before that. He landed flush. I don't know if Jake Paul could go and be an all-sport athlete, play other sports very good and athleticism like that. But when it comes to boxing athleticism, he's got quick twitch muscle fibers.
Yeah, he does.
He's got good footwork. He's elusive. Whenever Ben would come forward, he'd evade very well. And he's got power. So he has the things that it takes to be a fighter.
Yeah.
Now he has to say, okay, I can't keep picking these guys that Ben that just had hip surgery. He's retired, 39 years old. And he's, by the way,
the fattest person in the history
Jesus Christ.
I don't even know.
And probably our worst striker in all of MMA. No disrespect to Ben, but you can't hand pick these guys anymore. Now, if you're going to legitimize yourself, we have to give him some stiffer competition. Well, he has to be on equal playing field.
He wants to fight Fury's brother.
Is that what he's saying?
He just admitted that, but your big brother has to fight on the same card. And I'm like, you know, that's not going to happen.
He's just kind of playing the game.
He's playing the game. And here's the thing is like, I when people see me box, they're like, Dodge, dude, you versus Jake Paul. And I'm like, listen, I get it. You guys don't like Jake Paul's like demeanor. Mm. I get it. He's a fucking kid.
Yeah.
Fuck. That's like richer than everybody. You know what I mean? Like he's living a fucking wild ass life. He's on this fucking ride right now. Has he picked these fights? But at the end of the day, you can't sit there and say he can't fucking fight. He's literally knocked everybody out. And if you don't have hands, you can't knock people out.
He's got power.
He's knocking fuckers out. And he's actually getting better. Yeah. He looked way better this time than he did the first fight compared to the second fight. Mm. He was moving a lot better. He looked decent this last fight.
Yeah,
and I mean,
he looked decent against Ben Askren.
Yeah, Ben Askren. I mean,
who
the thing
I thought
is,
maybe might have had some sort of
what they say. Ben,
I mean, I'm like Ben Askren is the great Ben Askren. And he said over and over again, I didn't train boxing. My wrestling was so good that I did not train boxing. And I'm like, okay, well now you have 12 weeks. He's such an athlete. Why couldn't he not figure out boxing? It's really not that hard. But when you see, like I said, some bodies hate boxing.
Yeah,
and he has that body.
Yeah.
He could train for 10 years and never look like a boxer. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have it.
Yeah.
If you fight somebody that does have it, just look at my life. I fought and I beat a guy. And then it was like, man, you're good. You should fight another guy. I was like, I agree. I will. And then I fought a guy that beat the fuck out of me because that's what happens.
Yeah.
You're going to fight a UFC fighter and a shit one that can't box. And then people hype you up until you fight somebody where I'm like, you know what? I beat that guy, but I wonder if I could beat this guy.
Yeah.
And then this guy, as Alan knows, there's levels to this game.
Yeah.
Then you meet a guy, like I go to Sax, it's like, fight sparring him today.
Yeah.
He's like, I could have hit you then, I could have hit you then, I could have hit you then. Yeah. And I could tell. Don't go spracking off on the mic about knocking everybody out, Jason. Joe Ban on his worst day could finish you quick.
Right.
And Joe Ban's not the greatest boxer in the world, so don't be like, oh, Conor McGregor, you're next. Like, dude, do you know how disrespectful that is?
Yeah. Yeah.
But Nate Diaz, you're going to knock him out in 3 rounds? Sign that and have Nate Diaz fight you because Nate didn't.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah,
I would still say good
luck with that.
I would way rather fight Nate Diaz than fight Kyle. I fought Kyle Kingsbury.
Yeah,
I think Nate Diaz is a better boxer than Kyle Kingsbury, but Kyle Kingsbury is a giant dude,
right?
Who's like six.
Nate will touch you up, Kingsbury will knock you out.
Yeah, and I feel like that's his thing is fighting little guys, fighting guys that you know you can't get hit. Because I could tell when I box guys that with 10 with 16s on, and then we have an MMA fight with 4 ounce gloves on. Mm-hmm. My heart rate is already up before we fought because I'm under the impression now that you don't even have to be that good of a puncher. If you land flush, I'm probably in trouble.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's exactly true.
I think Jake would have a really hard time with Nate Diaz.
Oh, yeah, it'd be interesting to see.
Nate Diaz is a fucking athlete.
Is Nate Diaz 190 when he walks around?
Well, Nate Diaz does kind of blow up, but he's not a true munchies, though, right? It's not from getting jacked.
It's from getting fat.
He's a freak ass athlete.
But talking about size,
guy, I mean, he's crazy.
Right, he's got great cardio, great pressure, and puts combinations together once he gets in your face. Jake is just, he needs to start leveling the playing field now. Yeah. He's been handpicking opponents. We know that, right?
And, enough's enough.
The worst guy, but enough's enough. Get somebody that's actually, if you want to legitimize yourself as a boxer, that makes sense. And also the weight, like, we don't even know how, did Jake cut weight? Like, he weighed in at 192. Ben was like as fat as he could be at 191. Yeah. I mean, get somebody that you guys are actually the same weight.
Yeah.
Has some remotely, you know, decent
striking. It's coming. I don't believe he's scared. I believe that he's baby stepping it because it's a career move.
I think he's baby stepping. I also think he's like playing the field to make this money.
I was going to say, like, it's a business. The guy's making more. He made $1 million off Dana this weekend.
That's what I
know. Did Dana actually make that bet?
Snoop Dogg? I don't know.
Snoop was saying that he did $2 million.
Yeah. Here's my thing, right? Is everybody's Triller was a shit show. I watched that whole thing.
Worst thing ever. See the billionaire fight some pop star? That was the most unfair thing I've ever seen in the world. I was like, really? Yeah. You guys got paid. And now you're telling me six figures? You got six figures for that fight?
Okay, so for example, here's the thing with Triller, right? In the UFC, like let's say on the main card, the first fight of the main card, what do those fighters probably make that fight?
Oh, 10 and 10, 12 and 12.
1,000.
Yeah. Okay. 10,000. These motherfuckers. The 10 more to win.
These motherfuckers made six figures from those shittiest fighters, and I'm like sitting
and
there,
possibly
like,
pay per view points.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there like, every fucking UFC fighter should leave and go to Triller because they're gonna get paid. They're gonna do one fight. And they're gonna make more.
But they won't get the fight because you don't have the other thing. You have to have a thing where you have to have. I can. I look tough, but Jake can beat me.
Yeah.
That's one thing you have to have. Yeah. Or there's this like, I've got a really big podcast. I'm a really giant musician who hits pads.
Yeah.
I race cars and I box a lot. Ken Block could get a fight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like people that,
absolutely.
You know, Kerry Hart could get a fight.
Did you see Tyron Woodley in the locker room?
I did. Who is that guy?
I got to tell you, whoever his boxing coach is for Jake Paul, the amount of disrespect right there. And look,
okay, good.
Wait, what happened? I didn't catch that.
I think it looked like Woodley was watching him wrap his hands. You got to have somebody make sure that they're not doing anything. So Woodley's in there by himself, watching Jake Paul get his hands wrapped in, and Jake Paul's trainer is there, and he's just mouthing away.
He's got boxing gloves in his hand. He's like,
you don't know nothing about this. And Woodley's playing it pretty cool, and he's saying, you know, look, I got six championships at home. You don't know nothing about this and this and that. But the guy was just like a little barking dog.
Woodley's no chump. I mean,
like, right.
I know, but it's Woodley's so coming obvious. Off some, everybody's
just the amount of disrespect, though. Yeah. It was just like, it's because
all bets are off, dude.
You know, the first
if Jake Paul can talk and somebody in the actual UFC can tweet back, then this dickhead can talk to Tyron Woodley.
And it's just making the world be like that you could just mouth off to anyone and do whatever because these kind of people right here, that just mouth off. But I'm looking at Woodley.
You might get a fight with Woodley from this. You realize that? Like
that guy, Jake. Right. Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking. Like, so it's hopefully like, that
this,
guy
this
doesn't.
Whole thing, like, we're like disrespectful, but it shows that it pays.
The guy was talking about boxing, and maybe the guy does. I don't know his coach. He might be a terrific boxer.
He said
boxer.
That he was a champion boxer.
But you're gonna talk to Woodley like that? Who? Let's be realistic. If we met in an alley one night and there was nobody around.
Oh yeah.
You wouldn't survive. No. I wouldn't let go of the show.
He'd murder you.
Nobody's here to pull me off of you. You would die that day. So don't talk to me about boxing gloves. Like, I was so fired up. Like,
I saw Daniel Cormier say the same thing. Yeah. He's offended on his behalf.
Yeah, it was disrespectful.
But that's part and parcel of this whole gimmick. Like, you let the gimmick in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And now you think they're going to keep
Everybody's chirping.
Everybody's chirping.
Poirier's
chirping to Jake.
Everyone should get a little Masvidal. Kind
of wild world, man.
Everyone should get a little on Masvidal's tip and just start striking fools. What do you know about these?
I kind of want to know
about those, you dickhead.
Yeah.
Who the fuck is this guy just talking
just
to me right now?
Just shut him up because his whole crew is now getting more and more confident.
He should have beat all those dudes in that room and Jake Paul. Fight's over.
That's the one thing I think Masvidal, when he came through, is like, he's fucking, he'll bust you up in the back. He doesn't give a fuck.
It puts people back in line. Like,
it's a respect thing. Like, it's just disrespect, you know? And it's like same thing. Like, Jake Paul pops off at people. I guarantee you he didn't pop off to Masvidal, even though they're cool together. I get it.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? It's like,
Masvidal's cool with him. And I gotta say,
of course he is.
Even
of course.
Paul.
This is a prostitution
even Jake
ring,
Paul
baby.
Kind of.
Don't even think that. Don't even think Masvidal even fucking knows that.
Probably not.
He's
not
like, here he comes. Like, here he comes. All right. Oh, fucking Mike Perry sparred Jake Paul. I wonder who got paid for that sparring session.
Yeah. Then
when you tell the guy, you really got me. You know why he said you really got me? Because you just gave him like $30,000 to punch with you for five rounds.
Yeah. I saw that actually today
about
the Perry thing. And I'm like,
you disagree?
Oh, no. With the Jake Paul thing?
With the Mike Perry thing. I thought you were looking at me like,
No. I was thinking because I know somebody that went and sparred with the Jake Paul crew and he didn't even get paid. And I was like, why would you not have hit those guys up for like a tremendous amount of money?
Well, a good guy, a name would get paid.
Right. Yeah. And you would think Mike Perry obviously would have got paid pretty decent. But
Those guys kind of ducked me.
It makes me think that like Mike Perry is kind of a good one.
I went on Logan Paul's podcast. I was like, I got my gear right now, ready to spar. And he's like, man, we could maybe do it like tomorrow or something. And then his coach was like, we could spar on the weekend. I'm like, okay.
And then it just never happened.
No.
They
probably went check your videos out. Like, nah, fuck that one.
Took some balls to do that, man. To go into their place and bring your gear back. his whole squad is there.
I already said Do you think I give a fuck about a Paul brother? I fought Shane Carwin. I don't give a fuck about a Paul brother.
That was wild.
Props to you, man.
That's
good.
I mean, it was one hand, but it was still that one hand was coming.
That one hand's bigger than both your hands.
And he's way better of a boxer. So I was like, this is such a shit deal.
But it was Triller was a shit show, but they made more money than everybody. So.
They didn't make as much money as the UFC did.
I don't. Well, I mean, the UFC wasn't a pay-per-view.
You know, they timed it where the fight. The main
I know
they
did. We were
the
fucking
same.
Dying.
I paused the UFC. Yeah. And was like, let me get the shit show out of the way, and then let me watch Bobby Knuckles because I don't want anybody disturbing.
So we were on.
That's funny how they did that.
I worked. I was on set, and we're like, all right, like we have to be focused on the UFC, but we all want to see the shit show as well. So like, we were all sealing it on our phones, and we're like watching the shit show. And as I was so happy when it was over because like, thank God. And then you go and you watch Bobby Knuckles, you watch Robert Whittaker and you're like, holy shit, this is art. This guy is high level fight. Just
God.
Offense,
he's
defense,
the greatest.
Strategies. Yeah. It was amazing. And it just made you realize, okay, like that was shits and giggles for, that was fun for a second. Yeah. But now this is passion. This is pure.
He's my favorite right here. When you see how good he is and how he talks after the fight. And then you see Jake Paul.
So humble.
It's like, okay, Bobby Knuckles would fucking murder Jake Paul in a boxing fight. Fucking murder. Yeah. And then MMA, now you're really dead. But even him, like, oh, Izzy said, nice work, my son.
Yeah, my son. Yeah.
And then Bobby's like, he did win the last fight. So, you know, he has that to say.
Yeah. So polite.
But I'm practicing, so I'll be ready. And I'm like,
yeah.
I mean, you said that, good for you, nice tweet, but make no mistake, I've got some new shit. I'm going to tear your fucking head off. But instead of saying that, he just said, you know, I've been working, so we'll see what happens in the future.
That's kind of Robert's angle, too. Everybody.
A gentleman.
He's a gentleman. Yeah. And everybody, just like Jake Paul, that we're talking about, everybody like calls him out, right? I do it all the time. Every time they say, who's next? I go, me. Just, you know, hey, maybe he'll respond to it or whatever. Maybe he wants to fight me. But. Everybody wants to fight Izzy because the middleweight division in UFC right now is so competitive.
I'll fight Jake Paul, but I don't want to fight Izzy.
If you're trying to be a middleweight contender, there was three middleweight fights, three weekends in a row. And so all of those winners are lobbying, trying to get that fight against Izzy. Here comes Bobby Knuckles right there. Whittaker puts on a flawless performance. And you would think he's the first one to go, I'm the guy. He goes, whatever happens, happens. You know, like he's just so cool. And it just makes you go, that's the dude. That's the guy that gets
easily.
It right there.
He's and not he looks so nothing. Good.
He let his work do the talking.
Yeah.
He looked amazing.
And Gaslam's got some hands too. So it's just
Gaslam's a gamer because it takes two to tango, right?
Yeah.
If Gaslam would have got knocked out and not came back in that first round after the head kick, he stayed on the foot on the pedal. He kept trying to finish the fight for five rounds. He goes into the corner, the fourth and fifth round. Rafael Cordell is saying, I need something out of you. He came and tried to finish a fight as badly hurt as he was.
Yeah.
That fight took two people. It just showed the levels in this game that Whittaker has it, man. He's the guy.
Yeah, Whittaker looked crazy.
Yeah, I don't think Gaslam had a bad day either. I think he looked very
good.
Dangerous, and I would hate whoever has to fight him next. They're going to be in the shit.
Did you guys watch the entire card of the UFC, most of it?
Yeah.
I found, and you know, I was working the show, so I couldn't be too judgmental on it.
Nice work on the Orlovsky, by the way.
Well, Orlovsky, I know. I was worried about that one.
Yeah, I was worried about that one too.
Getting better at it.
Yeah.
I thought there was some questionable calls though, man. I had three fights on that card that I didn't disagree with, and I thought the judging was a bit off. In that card, I don't know, the Luis Pena fight. You saw that one, Luis Pena versus Alex Munoz.
Yeah.
I thought Alex probably took that one. The girl fight as well, Jessica Penne against her name was like. Godinez.
Loopy. She took it down a lot,
Loopy,
right?
Godinez. And Jessica, like, is a friend, and I love her, and I was so happy to see the emotions of that victory. It was really fun to watch. But at the same time, I was like, damn, I thought Loopy won. And there was numerous calls in that card that kind of, I didn't know if I agreed with. But it was still fun, man. And again, to top it off with that masterclass by Whitaker.
Would have been good to see a undercard fight that didn't happen because somebody got pushed at the Wayne's.
No, man, so
Stevens really does need to fucking pipe it down, man.
Yeah. Fuck.
I know you're a badass, but like, don't fucking burner. Fight people at the Wayne's, dude. Yeah.
Sucks, man. That was going to be such a good fight. We were all still let down. And
sick of everybody doing that. I feel like for the sake of the sport, people like Robert Whittaker, that's what you want. Gentlemen that will kill you when the fucking bell goes. And then when the last bell goes, gentlemen again.
I'll say this, though. When that push happened, everybody that was there, the press, they were like, oh,
they loved it.
This is going to be a money fight.
I know, my Instagram was just that video.
And then when it got pulled from the card, I mean, we just felt heartbroken. It was going to be such a firefight. But they'll reschedule it. But it's just hard. It's crazy to imagine that it was a hard shove. But from a shove like that, he got a sprained neck and a concussion from that.
Yeah.
I mean, he just wasn't
severe
prepared.
Severe whiplash, yeah.
A little whiplash and, you know, being dehydrated when you get hit like that unexpected. I guess it just wasn't pleasant. So, shame. Hopefully they put that on a new card. You got the card coming up this weekend, though?
Yeah.
I got some three pay-per-view.
Usman, Masvidal.
Oh, rematch.
Yeah.
Wei Ling.
That's
going to
be it. Yeah, and they've already got the politics played into that one.
Yeah, man, you know what? I've always loved Rose.
Yeah, she's on one right now, too. I haven't seen her this pissed off in a minute.
Yeah.
She does not like that girl.
I think she's maybe trying to find something.
She sure don't like the girl, but it seems like she doesn't like... She's getting a little twisted with...
The communist stuff. Yeah.
I'm like, come on.
Better dead than red.
I just don't think Wei Ling is... I mean, yes, okay, she's from China. But I don't think she's like, you fucking, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Snowflake, I'm going to kill you on behalf of...
I wonder if it's because of like Rose's, like where she comes from, maybe like the whole, you know, Russia communist type thing. And she says that. But you're saying like, you don't think homegirl's like a communist, like, yeah.
Like, why even put her in it? You know what I mean? Like, oh, you're Chinese. I'm going to beat you on behalf of that. Like, whoa.
Yeah.
I know she doesn't speak English and there's somebody speaking for her, but I don't think the person that's speaking for her is lying.
Yeah.
I think she's saying what Wei Ling is saying. And so far, she seems to be a pretty nice
person. She seems like a pretty good girl.
She's a beast too, though. Yeah, so Rose can have her hands full.
And ever since
girl.
Her last fight, I see her like with training like in Thailand in different places with all these great fighters. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm not saying she can go to Thailand for a week and get better, but I just feel like she's been evolving. She's not just stagnant at the gym that she came from. She's been traveling the world, doing training with different really good people, Sanshai and other people like that, teaching her little tricks. So it's going to be a tough fight. But Rose is a girl that's
a banger.
Yeah, she's a banger. You can't underestimate her because she looks real docile, like a little flower, right?
Yeah.
She could break in half. And she gets in there, she moves so effortlessly, man. She's such a little
She's one of my favorites out of the females. I like watching her.
Fun matchup. Power versus finesse somewhere.
She has the better technique for sure.
Yeah, but Wei Li, I mean, she's powerful everywhere.
I mean, Jochechik went the distance with her and she obviously got a disfigured head in the process, but she was holding her own.
Yeah.
And could have kind of gone either way.
Right. And Jochechik got fucking dusted by Rose.
Yes.
Dusted.
This is true.
Twice.
It's MMA math, but this is true.
I know. That's probably not the way it works, but I'm just saying. Wei Ling took a lot of shots from Joanna that I don't think is the same as Rose. I think Rose's shots are a lot harder.
That's got to be giving her confidence. I mean, that's the kind of, you just got to find things that are good for you and you rely on those. Say, look what I was able to do and she wasn't able to do, and let's build on these.
Yeah.
And if somebody picks you up, don't hold on to the armbar. Let it go.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That'll be fine.
Dumped. Yeah, on that Kimura grip. This show is in Florida. First time UFC, first time any sport, I believe, is going back to full crowd. What is the number? You had the number.
Dude, Uriah Hall and Chris Weidman?
20-something thousand people.
Did you know that?
Uriah Hall, Chris Weidman's on that undercard or on the main card.
Anthony Smith and Jim Crute?
Oh, yeah. Anthony was saying he wanted that fight. He kind of liked that matchup.
Yeah, well, these are guys that are on the chopping block if they lose that, right? Like Weidman losing.
Weidman might be coming off of a win. Yeah, I think.
Really?
Yeah, Weidman, I mean, you know, realistically, he's somewhat past his time, but I think he came off of a win his last fight. He's trying to make a little bit of a run right now, but
I hope it works out. I like him.
Yeah. Yeah. Always like him. Wyman's dope, man. He's real cool. Hall. He's fighting Hall, you said. Uriah Hall. And Uriah Hall is coming off his last fight. It was the retirement fight where he retired Anderson Silva. Right. So it's been a minute, but he was able to knock out Anderson. Mm-hmm. So they're on that pay-per-view.
Yeah, it's a crazy fight. It's a very exciting fight with people that are very, very high level, unlike this weekend.
Yeah. That really, really let me down, man. Fight's gonna be...
All I wanted was just
Masvidal that. Masvidal on a full camp, too, this time.
Yeah.
Full camp, whatever. I don't think he's that necessary.
The full camp?
He shits me these days. The whole talking... I don't know what it is with people that become like...
Masvidal,
this,
you talking about?
Yeah, when you become a star...
Yeah.
I can't stand you anymore. You just the whole, I'm the fucking, everyone's going to get it. I'm like, oh, God, do you have to do it all the time? Can't you save it for like.
Yeah, he became, when he was mysterious and he did the three-piece in a soda thing, he was at his all-time high. And then, I agree. Once he became kind of more of a celebrity, he kind of started saying certain things that people didn't agree with. And he just kind of.
Well, I don't care about that. Everybody can have that.
Well, no, I'm not even talking about. I'm not even talking
about. I just think you got
politics.
Your little catch line things all the time where. You're just like a...
He was in the media so often that it wasn't...
of yourself, you know? Yeah. You're just selling this gimmick to me all the time. I'm like, I get... You got a manager and you're so hot right now, but that's what I'm trying to say. When you get famous from being a real athlete and now your famous manager agent gets you and tells you that you have to have a new tequila and a new fucking thing and a fucking super necessary like and subscribe...
Yeah.
I liked you because you, if somebody looked at you sideways, you fucking snapped them.
That's
and you're
really
an MMA
what I was
fighter.
Referring to. Yeah. All this stuff. We've seen so much celebrity out of him lately.
I think
that
people
it's
need to start
attractive.
Having a backbone for their own careers. Like, you've got a manager.
Usman. He doesn't give a shit about any of that famous shit. That's what's scary about him.
But it's easy.
He's scary for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I'm saying like that. It's just like, but guys also, like that, I'd be more scared of that guy.
It's also easy when he's like, a champ because it's like, what the champ says goes.
I do want to say, I think Usman, you don't know because Usman's not as marketable.
Yeah.
I think that there's this thing where you can be the number one fighter in your weight class, but then there's this Conor McGregor effect.
Yeah, like, right,
and Masvidal definitely got a Conor McGregor effect.
Right.
Where people that didn't know MMA or even see the fucking fight were like, oh, it's the guy in the UFC, super necessary.
Yeah.
Need Ben Askren in the head. That's all you need.
That's all you need.
And now he's management, which is, I get it. I've been kind of famous before. They tell you to do a bunch of shit. Oh, sign this. I've got a book. I've got a fucking thing. Blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Consume.
It's such
I'm
a water,
the fucking
water
problem
things
now.
Down. Yeah.
I get it. You got to, and the difference is Masvidal cannot be Masvidal in the UFC for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
It's a very small window, so you need to cash out. But it's such a sellout game these days. Everybody who's the best now has this gimmicky thing that they have to sell me after. And I'm like, I just wanted to see the fight, man. I don't really care about drinking your whiskey. I mean, I hope you sell whiskey, but I just want to see you fight. Yeah. And it seems like it's way more about what watch you've got on. And when the fight happens, it's not that good. You're not that good anymore. You're way more into the whiskey and your watch.
Masvidal, full camp, going against Usman, I think he's going to be able to throw a little more combos and explode a lot longer.
Yep.
But the word on him is like, he just starts to fade. He gets tired. That's just, he doesn't, he's
especially
not a natural
with a guy like Usman.
Cardio guy. And a guy like Usman who's going to wear on you, push you against the fence the entire
time. He could take your best shot.
Yeah.
Maybe not five of them, but he could probably take a good, you land a couple of clean ones. He's not going out for those.
No.
And he's got crazy striking himself now.
Yeah. His striking in his last fight was.
The jab from both sides.
God. Yeah.
Right.
And then up against the cage. Jab. Masvidal hates that.
Yeah. I think Usman is just fully, has a lot more
not a lot
skills,
of holes.
Not a lot of holes.
Yeah. But,
and he's a fucking...
And he's a monster of a beast of an individual.
He's in shape all the time.
One of the biggest, strongest welterweights we have in a division with the skill set.
God.
Tough to beat.
Yeah, I don't... it's like, fuck, dude. Like, well, how do you beat that?
Yeah,
guy?
It's kind of like Shevchenko. Yeah. Shevchenko's on the same card, I believe. Valentina Shevchenko. She's a 125-pound champion in the UFC, and she's just probably one of the best strikers in MMA. And she's in a division that's our weakest division in UFC, the 125-pound women. So whoever she goes against, she just devours them.
It's just how do you train? For Usman, I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you got to train, dude, because you got to train. But it's like you go in and you train, you fight him, hoping just to like land that shot.
You got
to catch him.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, ugh.
Because he's been in the 5-round battles and he's shown
and he doesn't even tire him.
Yeah. I mean, he's knocking people like Kobe Covington out in the 5th round.
Breaking their jaws.
And so,
so he's got some
hands.
He
can go the distance.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's got that improved
And Colby's
jab.
Tough as, I mean, kid's tough, hits hard as fuck too. Yeah. And
I really hope I'm wrong. Like I was wrong with the Jake Paul, Ben Askren fight and George Masvidal switches Usman off. Cause I'd be like, yeah, new stuff.
Something fun. Something
And then we get to talk about how necessary you are. And then you get another title fight. Maybe you fight Conor McGregor because Dana White's like, all the money. I don't know.
I would like to see the Nate Diaz Jake Paul fight though, for sure.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I mean, and why not, Nate? Like, you hate Dana. Go do it to piss Dana off.
Jake would be too scared to fight. And you know, whatever. I don't think he'd want to fight Tyron. I think he would take Nate first because he's like,
Tyron would fucking tear him up.
He's bigger and stronger than Nate. And he could possibly take that fight.
Tyron's got that. He's got a hammer on him, dude.
Right.
He'll fucking knock you.
And Tyron's more of a boxer.
He's more of a boxer.
He can really box.
He really can box. Right. Yeah, he's got some hands on him.
Pick an MMA guy that has great hands. Now you've got a different game entirely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's the range, man. Because it's MMA. You could be so good at all the other things. You don't really have to have great hands.
Yeah.
He has good hands. Yeah. You're going to die.
I mean, sooner or later,
as long as I stay alive long enough, Jake Paul's going to fight a guy and he's going to lose.
Yeah.
So all in the end will be well. That's all you got to know. That's what's going to happen, man. He's going to fucking knock out Tyron Woodley, and then he's like, fuck it, I'm in MMA.
Yeah.
I'm going for Masvidal. Yeah. Like, no, that's not going to happen.
But
so,
here's the thing. You think if Jake Paul loses that he'll come back or he'll be done?
I don't like the person. He sounds annoying and stuff, but I think if somebody puts in that amount of training and is willing to fight, I would have thought that Ben Askren had a big chance of me being demoralized, gassed, and hitting me in the 8th round where I don't see it. And he was willing to face that.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's the greatest fighter. I think he's a baby mentality, but I think he's not. I think that he is we're all afraid, but he will face his fears.
Yeah.
And if you're better than him and he loses, see, that's the credibility that he's going to get. He's going to fight somebody that's better than him sooner or later. And he's going to show you heart. Before he gets put down, he's going to show you that he's not scared. And people like Alan go, oh, man, you know what I mean? Like, at least you put on a show. You didn't go down. You didn't cop out. And I believe that that's in that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's as far as it goes. I just don't know how much further can it go.
Yeah, I feel like that's like with Ryan Garcia, you know? Yeah. When his last fight, he fucking got knocked out, basically, and got back up and won the fight. And that's when I think everybody's like, oh, he's a legitimate boxer. Because all of his other fights, he's just tearing every fucking body apart.
So tough to deal with.
And he finally got rocked and got, I mean, he got fucking shook, you know, onto the ground. I mean, and got up and fought still. And that's what I was like, oh, I got a lot of respect for Ryan Garcia.
Speed kills, man. That is a fast dude, Ryan Garcia.
Fast dude. But like I said, I was just happy to see them. Like, he's a fighter. Like, he got up after getting like knocked the fuck out.
Yeah, people respect that. People respect adversity.
They haven't seen it yet. No, nobody's seen it yet. And that's what I'm curious of Jake. Like, Jake hasn't really been.
Yeah.
Stick around.
Yeah.
It's coming.
It'll come. It has to.
All right. Thanks, everybody. I hope you enjoy the show. Thanks, our first guest ever. Thanks for being on the show. Thanks for punching us and shit, you giant bastard.
Where can we find you?
My Instagram's that one leg monster. That's pretty much, I don't do like the whole tweeting stuff. It's just Instagram.
I like that
one leg monster. It was a nickname given to me for, well, I guess, having one leg and being a monster ass.
I was going
to
say, I wonder where that came from.
It suits you somewhat well.
Yeah. So it's kind of stuck. I'll be in the airport to be like, I don't even know my name sometimes. Like, oh, one leg monster. I'm like, what's up, dude? I'm like, what's up, man? And it's just the thing. You're not going to find me on Pornhub. None of that. So it's just Instagram, that one leg monster.
If you're looking for me, guys, that's where I'm at.
That's his name on Pornhub.
On the other side of the table, though.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Take care, guys.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.